I'm pulling on my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time to drive to work. Okay, so longtime listeners know I love spectrums. I love talking about all sorts of different spectrums. So today, I have a brand new spectrum I've never talked about before. So today's spectrum talks about design, new design. And so at one end of the spectrum is what I call demand, and the other end of the spectrum is what I call innovation. So the idea is we are doing new content, and the question is sort of on one end of the spectrum, demand means we are making the things that players want us to make. Make a thing, bring this back, you know. And the other end, innovation, is we're doing things you've never seen before, right? And the idea is we want to hit all ends of the spectrum, but I want to talk a little bit about the history of the demand versus innovation spectrum, what it means, and how it's changed over time. That is my topic today. Talking about a spectrum you didn't even know existed. Okay, so let's first talk a little bit about what the spectrum entails. So on the far end of demand is what I'll say reprint. You've done this before, just do it again. You know, you printed this card, I liked it. Print this card again. That is sort of the absolute of demand, is just wanting us to once again do things we did before. The next step of that is sort of completion. And the idea being there is, oh, let's say we've done the ally dual end, do the enemy dual ends. Or let's say we've done something you really like in one color, do it, but do it in another color. Like I get a lot of requests, what a lot of people call the relentless mechanic, meaning you can have as many of these in your deck as you want. We haven't made a white one yet. Make a white one. So the idea of completing something you've started. Next is the idea of returning things, not necessarily in the same form. So like bring back this mechanic I love, but do new things with it. Maybe have new abilities and new colors. You know, take this thing that I really enjoy, but then bring it back and do new things with it. And then the next step there is sort of extrapolation. I like how you did this thing. Hey, what if you took Landfall but applied it to other card types? What if you did Metalcraft but applied it to other card types? The idea of extrapolation is I like something you did, and I can imagine I can plug in this thing for that thing. What if you did it, but you did it slightly differently, but in a way that's very extrapolative? Like, okay, you know, here's a part of the game. Well, instead of being this part of the game, make it that part of the game. And then you get into sort of true innovation where we do something you've never seen before, right? And so the spectrum really has a lot to do with sort of how much we're delivering on what you expect versus how much we're delivering on what you don't expect. And I will say, as I get into this, we want to do the full spectrum. We want to deliver on every aspect. We want to give you things that you want. We want to return things you like. We want to extrapolate in things you enjoy. And we want to just innovate and do things you've never seen before. But now let's talk a little bit about the challenge of the spectrum. So when Magic first comes out, back in 1993, Richard Garfield makes Alpha. It's on the innovation end of the spectrum. In fact, the very first set ever made, there's no demand. No one knows what the game is. It's all innovation. Everything Richard's doing, you've never seen before, right? Now, once one set exists, now you get circling a little bit of demand. Oh, I like this or like that, you know. For example, when Richard made Alpha, or Wizards made Alpha, I should say. I mean, Richard designed Alpha, but when Wizards printed Alpha, there was a mistake. A bunch of mistakes. One of the mistakes is they left off a few cards. Two of them that are probably the most important is there was circle protection, and in Alpha, there was circle protection white, blue, red, and green, but no circle protection black. In fact, it's funny, I remember the time, because I played during Alpha, I thought that was like a conscious decision. Like, black is so evil that white can't protect itself against it. But no, it just got left off the sheet. Likewise, they did 9 of the 10 dual lands, but Volcanic Island, the blue-red one, got left off the sheet. So the first idea is just, oh, I like these. Finish your cycles. You know, that Alpha gets printed, like, oh, well, you didn't make a circle protection block. You didn't make a red-blue dual land. Do those. Now, obviously, beta would then bring those in. But as soon as the game offered players something, players enjoyed things. They liked things. Oh, I want more of that. Now, early Magic didn't have a lot of keywords, but the keywords that did exist, people like, ooh, I like those keywords, or even things that were unkeyworded. I like Sarah Angel. I like when it doesn't tap to attack. That doesn't have a name yet, but I like this Sarah ability. Do more things with the Sarah ability. So early Magic, it's very easy to innovate when, you know, you haven't made much. So if you look at early sets, for example, so the first expansion was Arabian Nights. That was the first top-down set. We'd never done that before. It was based on 1001 Arabian Nights. It was based on another source material. Antiquities had a mechanical theme. It was artifacts. All the cards had to do with artifacts. Magic had never done that before. That was brand new. We get to Legends. It introduces legendary permanence. It introduces multicolor. Like, just wide, you know. Like, the funny thing nowadays is both those things are so big, we wouldn't put them in the same set. You know, like, the idea that we wouldn't introduce both those together because they're so big. But early Magic, there's lots of room for innovation. There's a lot of things we haven't done before. And the other thing that's really interesting is we get pretty far into Magic with some basic things that haven't happened yet. For example, like Enter the Battlefield effects. Those don't happen until Visions, right? Like that Visions is in 96. So we're talking 3 years in before Enter the Battlefield effects. You know, like, and a lot of things that are now are just like core. Like, I created Hybrid Mana for Ravnica. Ravnica, that's, you know, well, I made it in 2000. When Ravnica? Ravnica came out in 2024, I think. But anyway, that's, Hybrid Mana is like 20 years old. It's, you know, it's, for a game that's 31 years old, that didn't come for a while. And so there's innovations that we make that some of them take a while to come up with. Some of them were like, you know, some were very obvious. Some take a little while to get there. But the idea essentially is early Magic is just dripping in innovation. Only because there's lots of space to explore. There's lots of things to do. And every set can just introduce something brand new that you've never seen before that really can shock you. But as Magic progresses, so the thing about the spectrum is, early Magic, there wasn't that much on the demand side of things. We haven't made that much. But as we make things, players like things. Players want things. Like, the more Magic we make, the more things players want. And I say this all the time, but let me sort of re-stress this. One of the unique things about Magic is Magic players are not a monolith. Magic players want very different things. And that every card we've put out, there's somebody out there that's their favorite card, that they want more of that card. Okay, so what happens is, innovation is easy in the beginning. There's lots of things we haven't done yet. But as time goes by, innovation gets harder to do. Especially like the far end of the spectrum, when I say innovation, is like, blow your socks off. I've never seen that before. You know, it's like us doing split cards or double face cards or pitch cards. Like, there are definitely times, like, one of the things I have fond memories of is, for example, split cards, I made them originally for Unglued 2. They don't get used. When Invasion comes out, I pitched to Bill the idea, let's do split cards here. Bill's in on it. They weren't very popular internally. It took us a while to get the rest of R&D warmed up to them. But eventually we do. They come out on the set. Now, we purposely did not market them. It was a cycle of five cards. Our idea was, let's let people discover them. This is back in the day where we just didn't reveal the whole set before the set came out. It was a different time. But the idea at the time was, okay, we're not going to preview these. So they're just going to show up in packs. People will see them for the first time. Then what happened was, there was a leak. Somebody took pictures of like the print sheet that had them on it. Now, even then, even with pictures of split cards, remember at the time, we didn't change the frame. The idea of doing something that's a different frame, we just hadn't done yet. And so people, even though they saw pictures of it, they're like, oh, well, I guess this is an earlier version of the sheet, and they don't know which card's going to go on it. So that's just a placeholder to say it's this card or that. But they didn't even go, no, that's a real card. But I remember, when Invasion came out, that's at a point where Wizards of the Coast owned a bunch of game stores. And our flagship game store was in the University District by University of Washington. And we had the pre-release in the basement. I remember going to the pre-release. And I remember watching somebody open up a split card who clearly had not seen the rumor mill, had no idea they existed, and just the look on his face, like the utter, like, what in the world am I looking at? You know, and then just watching him slowly piece together. And then he figured, like, he clearly figured it out. And then he smiled, like, he didn't know what was going on. He was confused. And then I could see that smile, like, he got it. You know, he figured out what the split card was and how it worked. And it was just smiles ear to ear. And that is fun. Like, it is super fun innovating on things. It is super fun showing something for the first time and watching people wrap their brain around it. And like I said, the other thing when we innovate also is it's not like when we innovate, it's all necessarily smooth. There's always people when we innovate, they're like, you've gone too far. Like, I remember when we made pitch cards and alliances. For the first time, you could cast a spell even if you were tapped out. Or when we made double face cards, you know, there are people like, no, magic has a back. What are you doing? You know, when we innovate, usually when we innovate, the general rule is the public tends to be pretty happy. Most people like us pushing boundaries, but there's always people that are like, oh, this it's a step too far. But a lot of magic is the innovation. It is pushing and it's discovering. And the reason that the innovation side of things is important is we want to surprise the audience. We want to, what's the term? Surprise and delight, I think, is the term they use. We want to do things sometimes that you just don't see coming. But, and here's the interesting thing about the spectrum is, as time goes on, the demand side gets larger and larger. That the more things we do, the more things players want. And the more that we innovate, the more that we do new things, the more space we eat up. Now, Magic design space is pretty big. I have every belief that Magic will go on way beyond me. That I will die and at my wake, people will play Magic, right? Because there is a lot of design space there. But how much truly innovative, you haven't ever thought of this space. It tricks. And that's one of the challenges is, I mean, each side of the spectrum has its own challenges. The innovation side is, look, it's just hard to be innovative. Like, we can do wacky, weird things, but then we've done them. The metaphor I like to, so in Star Trek, there is an enemy on Next Generation called the Borg, and they're a collective. And they have like a unified mind. And one of the things about the Borg is whenever you use a weapon about it, they adapt to it. So the weapon only works once. And I like to joke that the audience is like the Borg. Like, we can do something innovative, but once we've innovated, you've seen it. It's not innovative anymore. And we have to really keep thinking. Now, there's a lot of ways to do small innovation. So let me talk a little bit about modern innovation. So let's say we want to innovate now. How do we innovate? Well, number one, we can push in new territories, although the low-hanging fruit stuff gets taken first. Like, I know there's a lot of people talking now about us making extra components. And the reason that we're making extra components right now is it's more of the open free space. Like, there's only so much, like, we can add another side to a card, but we do that once. We can change card frames, but we can do that once. Like, there's things we can do, but, you know, like, once we've done them, we've done them. The Borg recognizes it. We know, you know, the audience knows what that is. And so as we start to extrapolate and try to do things we haven't done before, it really depends on us pushing in different boundaries. So how do we find innovation nowadays? There's a couple things. One is that we can take things people liked. Well, that's extrapolation. Pure innovation comes from mostly technology. Like, as we design things, we make new technology. The way design works is, I want to do something we've never done before. For example, back in Tempest, I made the card Mindslaver. Originally, it was going to be Volrath's Helm was going to be the card. Volrath was going to take you over with his mind. And the idea of taking over someone else's turn at the time, we had to scrap the card. Volrath's Helm did something different. Because they couldn't figure out the rules how to make it work that he took over somebody else's turn. And there was problems at the time with mana burn. Like, anyway, like, a lot of the thing of taking over your turn is just mana burning you from the amount of mana you have, which wasn't really the point of it. The point was making you cast spells. So, like, we had to say, oh, but mana burn doesn't burn you. Anyway, eventually, mana burn went away. Things changed. They figured out how to do it. They figured out how to allow you to take over another player's turn. And part of that came from as we advance rules, as we advance templating, sometimes things that are impossible, we get the tools to pull it off. We change how a certain rule works, or we crack how to change something for one rule that opens up other things. That the mere nature of making new magic cards, we invent new tools. The other thing is there's new technologies. For example, printing technology. So when we made original Innistrad, the original way we wanted to do double-faced cards was there'd be two cards in your booster. One that was the single-faced card that went into your booster, and the other was the double-faced card you only got out after you cast the single-faced card. Sort of like an elaborate token in some way. But the problem was we couldn't get the printers. So I think when we said we wanted card A and card B to be next to each other, they said, well, okay, we can guarantee that 90% of the time. We're like, well, that's not good enough. We can't, 1 out of 10, that's not good enough. Now, eventually, there was a printer that figured out how to do that. And once again, got the technology to do it. And we were able to make Battle Bond, in which there were two cards that came together. Now, Battle Bond's a smaller set. At the time, there's only one printer that could even do it. But because it was a small set, we could print to that printer. And as time elapses, there's new things we can do. There's new things available to us. And so some of the innovation comes from us being able to do things we literally couldn't do before, either because we figured out things or because they're actual physical technologies that now exist. And so, like I said, we will continue to innovate. But the big difference, you know, sort of as time goes by, the innovate end of the spectrum just becomes harder and harder to do. You know what I'm saying? It just becomes more challenging. But we look for innovation. Like, we are constantly figuring out what is available to us. And a lot of times, you know, for example, I know I get ribbed a lot for the stickers in Infinity, but that was me really trying something new. Here's a brand new technology. If stickers actually worked, if stickers were really fun, you know, that is something we could branch off, and we were testing it. And like I said, there were a lot of logistical issues with it. That one of the big problems with stickers was that we weren't able to test the actual stickers because it wasn't until they printed them that they existed. But anyway, it's a good example of, I mean, not all new technology pans out, not all too not, but that's the thing we want to do. We want to be looking and finding new ways to do things. Okay, let's talk the demand end of the spectrum. So the demand end of the spectrum, the challenge there is almost the exact opposite of innovation. The challenge of innovation is it gets harder and harder to innovate. The challenge of the demand is the demand just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. There is a giant list. Like, one of the things that we as R&D do is, hey, we're aware of what people want. People want things, they tell us. I go on my blog every day, people just say, would you please make thing X? I would like thing X. Or, could you finish thing X? Or could you do thing X in a new way? Like, all the things I talked about before. So I've talked about, you know, we can repeat something / reprint it. We can complete something. We can return something, especially mechanics. We can extrapolate and make new things based on old things. Like a lot of Future Sight, for example. So Future Sight did a future shifted sheet where we were teasing the future. And most of that was just extrapolated stuff. We didn't do a lot of true innovation because we wanted to surprise you with that innovation. So most of what we did there is we extrapolated. Okay, we did this here, but what if we did that? We did this like this, but what if we did that? So the challenge of demand is, here's the way, I've talked about this a little bit, but it's important to understand this concept. Let's take a player. I'll call them Bobby. Bobby's favorite card is card X. What Bobby wants is more cards like card X. I love card X. Make more cards like card X. And sometimes, by the way, one of the way we do innovate, when we innovate on things, or maybe you can call it extrapolate, is if people really like a card, like we made a card, what was the name of the card? I'm looking at the card. There was a card in Champions of Kamigawa. There was a theme in Champions of Kamigawa. Oh, no, it wasn't Champions of Kamigawa. It was Onslaught. Misform Ultimus. Or is Misform Ultimus? What should I say? It was Misform. Anyway, Misform Ultimus. I always blink on where this sits from. It was a card that had all the creature types. I think it was in Onslaught because we had the Misforms could change their creature type, and the Misform Ultimus, the ultimate legendary one, just was all creature types. That was a really cool card, and eventually that led to Changeling. We're like, okay, people like this card. We're going to make a whole mechanic out of it. And a lot of sort of a lot of design. I mean, and that's why there's a middle point between demand and, like, extrapolation is sort of there where, hey, here's the thing we've done, but we can do more with it. And if you like, you know, if you like Myths from Ultimates, well, here's a whole mechanic that's Myths. Here's a whole mechanic that you can do that with. And we're always looking for that. Okay, but anyway, Bobby likes Card X. Bobby really wants more of Card X. And as far as Bobby's concerned, that's his number one demand. He wants more cards like Card X. So every time we have a set, he looks and says, would it make sense in this set? And as soon as it does, he's like, oh, this would have been a perfect fit. Why didn't you do Card X? Why didn't you extrapolate? Why didn't you do... I've been asking this thing forever. And finally, you did a set where it would be the perfect place to do it. And you didn't do it. And the answer is, it is not as if that one thing only exists. Everybody has the thing they want. Everybody wants their own thing. So it is not as if there's just some small number of things and can we just do those small number of things. There is a huge, giant number of things. And so what we've learned is we keep track of what players ask for, especially in conglomerate. Like, it's one thing for one person to ask for something. It's another if lots and lots of people ask for the same thing. And we do look for opportunities. One of the things when we're making a brand new set is thinking, okay, knowing what we're doing, what can we meet? What demands can we do? And I definitely am aware of things that people want. And when I'm making a new set, I go, oh, we finally found the place. Let's do that thing. But the reality is that there are a lot of factors that go into it. A classic example that I'm getting right now because of Modern Horizons 3 is Energy, when we first premiered it in Kaladesh, was in red, blue, and green. And the reason it was it fit the flavor of what we needed to do there with what you like. Like, when you make a set, you are trying to make a bunch of mechanics. You have to divvy them between colors, and you want to balance them so that you have all your archetypes. Like, a set has to deliver on a lot of spectrum. So there's a lot of decisions you have to make. So now we put Energy. Energy's return is coming back in Modern Horizons 3. But Energy in Modern Horizons 3 is blue, red, and white. Why in white? Because we have a different theme, the Eldrazi theme, using colorless mana, and that green really wanted to do that more. That theme worked better in green. It helped green. It made more sense in green archetypes. So we wanted it in green, and so it ended up being the Eldrazi is blue, red, green. So we didn't want Energy being exact same as Eldrazi, so we want, like, the way it worked, it made more sense for it to be in white than green. But I get it. There's players out there going, we've been wanting more. You're like, I have my blue-green red energy deck, and I've been waiting for more blue-green-red cards, and I want my commander for blue-green-red energy. Where is that? Energy returns. You could have done it here, but you didn't do it. And the answer is one of, look, there's a lot of things we need to do. We need to make the set work. You know, there's infinite demands. We are not guided by... Yes, we understand there's people that want things. There are always people that want things, no matter what we do. You know, there's also people that want energy. They want energy in new colors. I already have red, green, and blue. You know, give me energy in black and white. You know, so, like, it's not as if there's one thing that's the singular demand. And so we have to make the set work. And so one of the challenges of meeting demand is there's so much demand. Like I said, it's the exact opposite. We're swimming in demand. We're drowning in demand. There's so many things that people want. And we are trying to, as fast as we can, like, we are constantly trying to make cards people want. You know, there's not a set that goes by that we don't look for opportunities to make things that we know players want. But, and that's the big caveat, there's a lot of things and a lot of players, and that no matter how much we do, no matter how much demand we meet, no matter how much we return things and repeat things and extrapolate things, there's things we're not going to do that players still want. And maybe one day we'll be able to do those things, like I said. The demand end of the spectrum is the exact opposite problem of that we can't possibly do everything. There's more things people want than we have space and time to do. And that, hey, Magic's making a lot of sets. We do produce a lot of Magic. Now, I always like to say Magic's a hungry monster, meaning, look, we keep having to do things, and that, look, eventually, if something is good, we will get back there. We're aware of what mechanics work. We're aware of what mechanics are popular. Like, when we see opportunities, and one of the things I always want to stress is, for example, in Mirrodin, I made the energy mechanic. It didn't fit. I had to take it out. I liked the energy mechanic. So this is a case where I, the designer, this is not even the players. this is me, and you know, I'm well attuned to the things I want to do, right? I'm well aware, you know, like I wanted to find a home for that. I was motivated to find. I'm the guy that makes the sets. Like you, like here's a mechanic that I want, that I'm motivated by, and I choose what mechanics go in sets. Like I, you know, this is not like some player asking me, and then I have to do what the player's asking. This is just something that I want for myself. I wanted energy. I thought energy was a good mechanic. I thought people would enjoy energy. It took me 13 years to find the right place for energy. And that is me motivated. Motivated to use energy. There's two or three other sets we tried energy in. I would try energy. Oh, could energy work here? And the answer usually was, oh, it's not a good fit here. And what I had to say is, okay, it's not a good fit. I have to wait till I find a good fit. And that is a lot of how design works. That is not just a matter of putting whatever, for example, I will be vague. I will be vague in this. But we were working on an upcoming commander product. And there is a commander that people were asking for. And they're saying, hey, maybe we could put it here. But the reality was, it was a little bit, it wasn't a perfect fit there. And there was a set, I don't know, 3-4 later, that was the perfect fit for it. And we're like, okay, we shouldn't do this here. There's a set upcoming. Yeah, we have to wait another year or so. But there's a set upcoming that's the slam dunk, that this is what that set wants. Why are we doing it here? Yes, players want it, but it's an odd fit here, and it's a slam dunk fit coming up. We should save it, and we did. We saved it for the place that it makes the most sense. And that's a lot of design. Another good example is Poison. I loved Poison as a beginning Magic player. In Legends, Poison first came out, when we can innovate in the early days. The other thing that's great about the early days, like Legends, is it just made, I think Legends had 2 cards with Poison on it, like, leave it be! 2 Poison cards, let's go. You can just throw things like that out there, which is awesome. But anyway, I wanted to bring back Poison. We had, R&D had chosen to remove Poison from the game after, I think, Visions. But I wanted Poison, so I worked long and hard. I tried to put Poison in Tempest, didn't work. I tried to put Poison in Unglued 2, didn't happen. But eventually, I found a place to do it. I found a place where it was a natural fit, at the Phyrexians, it's Cards of Mirrodin, where it was like the slam dunk answer. And that's a lot of what happens is, you know, when we're talking about demand, it's a point of, it's, you don't want to be lackluster. And there's so many things to do. When you make a new thing, something's going to be the slam dunk there. It's just finding the right place to do things and having the patience to do the right thing in the right place. And that's a real skill. Players are loud, you know, and especially when the players as a group are very loud. Like, it's one thing for one player to be very adamant about it, but when you hear the same theme again and again and again and again, you, the player, okay, you, the designer, what? I want to find a place for this, you know. But we really learned that you have to find the right place for it, that it has to really work with what you're doing. So anyway, I'm almost to work here. The reason that I wanted to bring up the Spectrum today is, A, I love Spectrum. But B, really the idea of how we make Magic sets and how we deliver on what will make the players happiest is a tricky thing. That, like, kind of what you want to do is every set wants to have some stuff that's just, hey, we finally did it. This thing you've been asking for forever, we finally did it. And you want some, like, hey, you weren't asking for this. Oh, and that's the other thing about innovation, by the way. Demand is a little bit easier. I mean, extrapolation can be a little bit harder. But straight demand, I want thing X, make thing X. Hey, we got it. We understand what you're asking for. But innovation, and even extrapolation sometimes, there's a skill to say, I want to do something that either the players don't know about, or the players have expressed they want more of this, but maybe I can deliver in a way they don't anticipate. There's a lot of skills there. And one of the reasons I think I became head designer is I'm good with potential. I'm good with figuring out what doesn't exist but could exist. And if it existed, players would like it. A lot of my job, and it's gotten better over time, but a lot of my job is, here's this weird thing we've never done. Players will like it. People go, really? I go, no, they'll like it. And a lot, I joke about, like, pushing a boulder up a hill, right? A lot of my job when I'm innovating is, convincing the rest of R&D that this is different, but there's something players would like. And in general, what we've found historically is most innovations that we're careful with, players do enjoy. Innovating for the sake of innovation, you got to be careful. You don't want to do something just because you've never done it. It has to serve a purpose. It has to be fun gameplay. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just doing things you haven't done, but it's finding things you haven't done that make sense. And a lot of innovation is playing in that space. But anyway, guys, I thought this was... When you are 1,000 topics in on your podcast, I really want to look for new and different things. And this was a cool concept that it was something... One of the other things that happens is a lot of times, and I use my articles and my podcast to do this, there's ideas that I hadn't really worked through that have been there. And this was the idea that this was not my first recording of this podcast. This is my second recording. My first recording, I was really exploring things and finding stuff, and then I realized, like, okay, I need to structure it a little better. So, but anyway, this is a neat way to think of how we design new things, and I thought you guys will enjoy it. But I'm literally now at work, so we all know what that means. It means the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I hope you enjoy today's talk, and I will see you all next time.